Tell me something that you know about the book of Ecclesiastes. Something that you know about the book of Ecclesiastes. Yes. All right, it can seem, what would make it so depressing? All right, that's one of the key words. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And so you read the book and you go, oh man. Why am I here if it's all vain? You know? All right, so anything else? Yes. At least one song, and that's what one? All right. Somebody else. I'm sorry. Yes. Do we know that? Do we know that? You know, I have at least 10 concordances and commentaries in my library, and half of them say that he did not write this book. And they are conservative scholars that are saying that Solomon is not the author of this book. So we're going to discover if he really is the author of this book. Yeah, yes, something else. Yes. All right, so it has a conclusion about how we then can face all of this vanity. And turn to 12:12. This should be a verse that high school and college students should have as their favorite verse. It says in 12:12, "And further by these, my son, be admonished, of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness to the flesh." You know, there is no end of making books, and and much study is a weariness to the flesh. Any of you students agree with that? Any of you adults agree with that? Yes, all right. So then, this book of Ecclesiastes, for many people, is kind of a seemingly mysterious portion of God's Word. Again, if we understand what Solomon, did Solomon write? Yeah, and then he says there's no end of writing books, but this verse, and we're just going to touch on this verse and then move on, but this verse that would seem to teach us that we should no longer write books and we should give up study, it's not really saying that. There's a warning going on here, and the warning is a word that I think I can suggest. It's becoming over familiar with something, or getting too used to something. What does verse 11 say? Let's put this in context, what he said in verse 12. We don't want to take the verses out of context. What did he say in verse 11? He said, "The words of the wise are as goads." Now, somebody tell me what a goad is. Yes? All right, or sometimes it was just a pointed stick, and they would poke it in the rear flank of the animal to get it to move. Remember when the Lord appeared unto Saul, or Paul, on the road to Damascus? What did he say? "Is it hard for thee to do what? Kick against the pricks," and that's a goad. And so it's an agricultural term, and they would prod and they would spur someone on to go in the direction that you want them to go that may not be the direction they want to go. The goad was there to move and to guide and to lead. And so, what are, in verse 11, what are the words of the wise? They're as goads. They are there to lead us in a certain direction. They are there to spur us and move us in the right direction. The words of the wise. And then it says, and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. So nails, what do nails do? They give stability. So he's saying, here is why it's important to listen to the words of the wise. They will guide you and direct you, and they will give you some security, like a nail fastens some things. It's wonderful. But what's the problem? If a farmer prods and prods and prods and prods, what's eventually going to happen to that animal? He'll either kill it or that animal will rebel against it. That animal will sometimes get so used to the prodding that it doesn't work anymore. We used to have very low voltage electric fence at our house to keep some of the animals where we wanted to keep them. Especially at times my father would open up a section and we would just put a temporary electric fence around that to let the cattle eat out there. But it was so low voltage that guess what some of the cattle learned? That they could take the shock and it didn't bother them. And they would actually lean over the fence, eating the same kind of grass that's on this side of the fence, but now it's on that side of the fence. And they would lean right on the fence and they'd just lay on it. And it didn't bother them. They had gotten so used to that little bit of a prick shock that they didn't care anymore. And what this passage is saying, that if we're not careful, that all of these books and all of this studying will not actually produce the kind of results that we want to see produced. It's really a warning about the prods losing their effectiveness. And you know, it's sad that sometimes some of our young people who've grown up with so much teaching from home, from school, from church, that they somehow become indifferent to some of the prodding that's going on. And they just kind of become indifferent to it. They're so used to it. But this is really not saying don't study and don't write any more books. It's just saying be careful that you don't become immune to wisdom, that you listen and you learn. And I trust that's true in all of our lives, that we are continuing to listen and to learn. How many of you have reached the state of perfection already? None of us have. I haven't. And so we still need to learn, and we still need to be prodded, and we still need to be directed. And that's the truth of this particular passage. Now, let's go to what we talked about just a moment. And I can tell you already, we are not going to get very far tonight. But unless you want to go till 7:30, 8 o'clock, then we might get somewhere tonight. But why might it be important for us to conclude whether or not Solomon is the author of this book? I have reached a conclusion there, but apparently there are some authors who have not reached a conclusion there. And why might it be an important conclusion to reach? Why does it make any difference who wrote this book? Pardon me? All right, because of his wisdom. Anything else? Yes. That's right. Some of the things he says here seem to contradict some other passages of Scripture. And because of those apparent, seemingly contradictions, there are many, even conservative writers today, who have concluded that, well, Solomon cannot have written it, because if he did, then we wouldn't have all of these apparent conflicts. And so they try to put this author of this book as someone who lived hundreds of years later. And And I believe that it is going to be crucial to us to right here at the beginning be able to clearly identify the author of the book for us to have a correct interpretation of the book. If we don't have the right author, we will not reach the right conclusions. And I was really surprised when I began reading and found out that some people that really in some areas are very conservative, and I would take anything they say in their writings as really great. And then I found out when I was reading these same authors when it came to the book of Ecclesiastes, well, I concluded that they blew it. But I think it's very, very clear as to who wrote this book. And if Solomon did not write it, then what is the problem of putting these books in the order that we found him? Who wrote Proverbs? Yeah, most of it written by Solomon, because right in Proverbs 1:1, quickly somebody read Proverbs 1:1 right out to me. All right, Proverbs of song from Solomon, the king of David, son of King of David. And so it identifies him. Go to the book of Song of Solomon and tell me, read the first verse of the book of Song of Solomon. First verse. All right, Song of Solomon, which is Solomon. And so we have identification of him. And now where do we put the Ecclesiastes? Right in this whole grouping of books that we call wisdom literature. We would also include Job. I believe Job is a book that we might identify. Some put it as poetry, but it's a wisdom literature. And so we have wisdom literature, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. If Solomon didn't write it, then we have put the book in an awkward place. It's been placed in an awkward place in our scripture if it's not written by Solomon. And we have a disjunction then going on with the other books of wisdom literature, and some even would be some contradictions that some person years later wrote contradicting some of the things that some of the earlier wisdom writers wrote. And then this does facilitate, if Solomon didn't write it, facilitates the fact that there might be some contradictions going on. But tonight, in the next 10 or so minutes, we're going to discover a number of reasons, at least 5 or 6 reasons here, why I believe that Solomon is without question the author of this book. I love to do investigative work. I love to... did I ever tell you that I was hired once by a private detective to do some undercover work? That was fun. He even paid me to do it. You know why I was hired? Because I was unknown, and I could go certain places and they didn't know me. He was known. He couldn't go there because he was known. So he wanted me to find out some information so that he was working on a case, and he hired me to do undercover work for him. Boy, I really had a tough job too. I had to go to a dog kennel and had to ask about a certain dog trainer and if she was available for training my dog. And if that dog trainer was also raising any dogs because I was interested in a certain kind of dog that I wanted to buy. And then they gave me a list of all the classes this dog trainer was teaching, and I took it and mailed it to the detective that wanted the information. That was what I did. Did that sound dangerous? You know? That's all I did. You know what he was trying to find out? He was trying to uncover insurance fraud. And someone had said that they couldn't even raise dogs anymore because they had been injured and their whole livelihood of raising dogs was over. And they were a dog trainer and they couldn't do that anymore because of this injury. And so they were trying to get a settlement of hundreds of thousands of dollars for injury. And it was all fake because she was still teaching classes all over the place in the obedience school, and she was still raising dogs. So it was all a bunch of lies. And they presented the evidence that I provided, and the case was thrown out, and she lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yay. But I like to do this little bit of detective work, and it's really fun detective work to find out if this really is a book written by Solomon, because his name never appears anywhere in this book, not the word Solomon. But we have all kinds of clues. And let's start right at chapter 1, verse 1 of Ecclesiastes. And according to that verse, who was the writer here? The preacher. It's a word. And then look at verse 2. It says, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So there's the preacher a second time. If you go to verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. So he's calling himself the preacher there. And then if you go way over to chapter 12, verse 8, it says, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. So four times in this passage he's called himself the preacher. This is a participle. It's kohetheleth is the word. And it comes from a verb that is translated kehol, and it's translated to gather an assembly. To gather an assembly. Do you think that Solomon ever gathered an assembly? Yes, we're going to look at some times when he gathered assembly. So it's talking about a person who gathers people into an assembly for the purpose of addressing them. And let's go to 1 Kings 8. 1 Kings 8. Just maybe this is the time being referred to here by the preacher. 8:1. 1 Kings 8:1. Then Solomon, what's the word? Assembled the elders of Israel. Notice in verse 2, and all the men of Israel, what's the word? Assembled. Go down to verse 5, and King Solomon and all the congregation of Israel that were assembled unto him. And you can continue to look. All three times, this is the exact same word for one who brings together those who he wants to address. Now, what is the purpose of his assembling all these people together in chapter 8 of 1 Kings? All right. And what has he just finished doing? Building the temple. And so we have the dedication of the temple. They brought the ark up. They've placed it in its proper place. Now they're going to have, this is probably, what were some of the highlights of David's kingship? David. Probably, I would think maybe killing Goliath. Or, of course, he wasn't king yet then, but that was a highlight of his life. Maybe when he won certain battles, because he had all kinds of battles that he won. Those were the what do you think was the highlight of Solomon's life? Building and dedicating the temple. This is the highlight of his whole life. So what do you think he would like to do in the highlight of his whole life? Have an assemblage. And declare unto the people how wonderful his God is. And so, and what is our Greek word? What is the Septuagint? What is the Septuagint? Or some say Septuagint, but what's the Septuagint? All right, it's a Greek translation of the Old Testament. So what do you think they called this book in the Greek translation of the Old Testament? ekklesia, which is the Greek word for church. The Greek word in the New Testament for church. So it's assembly. That's what a church is. It's a group of called out ones who are called to assemble. And so then later, when the English translation was done, guess what they did? They borrowed the word from the Septuagint and called this book Ecclesiastes. Same Greek word. And so we have whoever this preacher is, he is gathering those out and addressing them, and we might call that addressing them preaching. That's why he's called the preacher. There's a second thing. What does it say there in chapter 1 of verse 1 of Ecclesiastes? The words of the preacher, the what? Son of David. Now, how many sons did David have? Anybody know? Well, he had a lot more than we even know. We don't have them all named in the Bible. He had all kinds of wives and concubines, and so David had many sons and daughters, some of which we are aware of. Some, but this phrase, the son of David, how many times do you think that phrase is found in the Bible? Just that phrase, the son of David, not in the New Testament, but the Old Testament, because the son of David, referring to Jesus Christ, is a number of times in the New Testament, just in the Old Testament. How many times do you find the phrase, the son of David? Actually, 9 times. 9 times there are those who are referred to as the son of David. And 6 of those 9 times, it is very, very, very clearly Solomon. Because he's mentioned. Solomon, the son of David. Solomon. So 6 out of 9, he's identified. And I could give you the references there. They're all in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 29, 1 Chronicles, or 2 Chronicles 1, and 13, and 30, and 35, and Proverbs 1:1, what did it say? He's identified as Solomon, the son of David. So we have 6 times that we know for sure it's talking about Solomon. Then, let's go to 2 Samuel 13. 2 Samuel 13. And the first one there, read it for us, verse 1. 2 Samuel 13, 1. All right, so twice in one verse we have the phrase. And who was one of those sons of David? Absalom. Who was the other one? Amnon. And so here's 2 more that are mentioned as given their name and the son of David. Then we have 1 other time, and someone turned to 2 Chronicles 11:18. 2 Chronicles 11:18. All right, the daughter of who? Jeremoth, the son of David. Here's Jeremoth, the son of David. And so we have looked at, well, we didn't look at all of them, but I gave you the references. So we have 2 times there's Absalom and Amnon and Jeremoth. Those are the only 3 times when it's not referring to Solomon. So which of these do we know, the preacher, the son of David, how do we know this is Solomon? Because only one of them was ever the king. The other ones, Amnon, Absalom, they were never the king. Now, Absalom tried to usurp the throne, but he was never really the king. And so there's only one son of David who was king in Jerusalem, and that was Solomon. So he has to be the preacher. Now, if you give me a couple extra minutes, I'll give you a third reason. So the first was that the word that is translated preacher, we can support that Solomon indeed did call assemblies together. Secondly, it indicates that he was a son of David. And then thirdly, one of the reasons we know that this is talking about someone during this time period and not a later time period is because in the Old Testament Hebrew scriptures, there are two ways to spell David. There's one way that only has three Hebrew letters. There's another way that has four Hebrew letters. Everything that was post-exilic. What is post-exilic? Those who were after the captivity, exile, post-exilic books that refer to David always have the four letters. All the books that are pre-exilic, before the exile, they have three letters for David. Guess what this book of Ecclesiastes has? If you were trying to determine whether it's a later book or an earlier book, which one would you think would be there? Three. And this, every time David is mentioned in this book, it's three letters, indicating that this was an early writing when they were still using just three letters for the name of David. Now, oh man, when I was reading, someone suggested that, well, it was a later writing, but they put the three-letter writing in here for David because they were trying to trick you. They were trying to fool you into thinking it was an earlier writing rather than, well, if that's true, then what is the author of Ecclesiastes? He's a liar, and he's trying to trick you into believing something that's not true. Doesn't sound like somebody the Spirit of God would be indicating to lead to do to write this book. I do not. In other words, the four-letter writing of David is 272 times in the Old Testament. The three-letter writing is 669 times. So again, what we're establishing is that this book fits the time period when Solomon was writing. It's in the right time period. And then lastly, tonight, we'll stop here. A fourth reason is because more than once in this passage, it mentions verse 1, king in Jerusalem. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Now, when it's talking about Israel here, it's talking about the whole nation, not just after the divided kingdom. And how many kings reigned over Israel, the whole nation, who were anybody related to David? Well, there was David and Solomon. That's it. None other reigned over just the nation of Israel, the whole nation. So there's another reason for us to believe that this was Solomon. So we have all kinds of evidence, and I'm going to give you a few more reasons next week as we move on. But without question, I believe this book was written by Solomon. And as we approach this book, our approach to this book is going to be seeing that why is everything vanity? That word is used over. Why is everything so vain today? Why is this world vain? Why are relationships vain? Why is everything so empty today? Because it has been affected by sin. We live in a fallen world. And because everything has been affected by sin, everything is vain then. It's empty. But does that mean we have to live an empty existence? No. And the whole truth of the book of Ecclesiastes, I believe, is not to depress us because everything is vanity, but to encourage us that we can live above that vanity by understanding who God is and how God works, and that we can live a very wonderful life in a fallen world. That we can live and embrace life. If we read the book of Ecclesiastes and we don't understand that, we'll come out of this study saying, woe is me. But if we understand that Solomon, who tested all of these things and found them all to be vain, still found meaning to life in serving God. And we're going to study this book by topics. And we're going to study this book by what it reveals about God. This book reveals deep, deep, deep truth about God. And you know how we can best live a life that's not vain? Understand who God is. Understand who God is. And so as we come back to this book that was written by Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, he's going to share his wisdom with us on how we can enjoy life, even in a fallen world. How we can have a prosperous life, even in a fallen world. That we can, do you think God wants us to enjoy life? Yes, but not apart from him. But not apart from him. If we try to enjoy life apart from him, what's the conclusion? It's all vain. It's emptiness. But if we enjoy life as God, the author of life and the giver of life, wants us to, we can enjoy life. We can be happy. We can be joyful. We can learn to embrace life under the sun, and under the sun, everything around us is vanity. That's one of the key phrases of this book, under the sun. Under the sun. And so let's learn over these next several Sunday nights how we can embrace life to its fullest under the sun by having a right relationship with God. I have a few more reasons that we'll come back to, but I think we could already see that we have concluded that Solomon is indeed the author of this book. Let's turn and close tonight.